In the name of Jesus Christ, I'd like to share with all of you the session on relationships and marriage. First of all, I'd really like to thank God and just let you know how happy I am to be here. This is my first time ever step on the soil of Canada. Yeah. So I feel really just really happy that it should be Vancouver. And because TJ told me many wonderful things, so I got to see for myself firsthand. Now, this topic on relationships and marriage, it has always been a topic of great interest to me because I myself am still a learner. Because God placed us in this world, and everything around us is based on relationships. Oh, you do have a handout. In your folder, it says love and marriage. I'd like you to scratch that out to relationships instead of love. Originally, I guess I was not thinking, excuse me, that looks like this. I'd like you to please scratch out love, although love covers all relationships, but primarily, I'm talking about premarital relationships because it really, we're going to talk about different types of premarital relationships. Okay? And so you can take notes on this sheet if you like. Because for me, I feel this year, this June, will be my 12th year being married. And each year I feel like I'm still learning on being how to be married. Every day I'm learning new things about TJ and learning about myself mostly. And because I see marriage is really a couple, it's really the foundation of church. We doubt firm and loving couples. We don't really have a loving church. So that's really, really a very, very crucial place where we want to begin in just not just building a good family ourselves, but to teach our next generation, because our kids are bombarded with all sorts of ideas nowadays where marriage is no longer valued. I don't know if you guys have heard about in California, they've been talking about this homosexual relationships where they're trying to legalize that, and there are some states that are already passed, and they're trying to change the concept about what family, what marriage means. So that's what our kids are facing nowadays. They don't see that as a very important aspect as it once used to be. So we need to really understand how important this topic is, not just to ourselves, but for our next generations, and how we can influence our children. So these are some of the topics we'll be talking about. First, the importance, and what is God's plan? And there are different perspectives, as you will obviously know already. And how do we go from singlehood to being, I call it couple, for going into a couple? Let me see. How many of us here are still not married? Are still single and free? Free. Okay. Not that it's bad to be bond into a marriage, but as I was sharing with someone at dinner time, TJ would say, "Oh yeah, no, before you're married, you're just like a free bird and you just fly everywhere you want." And you know, as it was like, so are you regretting being all locked up in a cage now? He says, no. I mean, I'm very happy caged bird now. I have the security of the cage. I say, very smart guy, okay. And we'll talk about the process. How do we, you know, what is the possibility of involving going into a single, into marriage, and the choosing the right perspective to help not just for ourselves, but help our next generation. Now, we are all familiar with what is God's plan and design. Originally, way back in Genesis, when God created man and women, I think it's just so amazing every time you think about in the Garden of Eden, he could have just made Adam. That's it. But he realized that as Adam probably realized, as he saw all the animals, there were male and female. There were male giraffe, female giraffe, male elephant, female elephant. I mean, there were just two. And then there was not another Adam. There was not another human being like him. He obviously felt there was a need. So, and God saw that there is a need. And God saw that man couldn't do everything. And I think that's an amazing thing. As the longer you get to know our spouse, and you find out that our differences that God had made was for us to help each other. Brother William was just sharing about how there was differences between him and you know, his future spouse. And I think Brother Matthew was talking about how opposites, you know, that they felt. And I see differences between TJ and I, but I think that's how God had made that for us to complement each other. And that's a wonderful plan. And God seeks godly offspring in Malachi 2:15. Now just let's turn to that verse, Malachi 2:15. By the way, I found out I was pregnant with my first child when I was at the NYTS. I was helping with counselors there. And after I found out, I wrote, instead of calling TJ, I sent him a card. And I just sent him a card with this Bible verse, Malachi 2:15. But did he not make them one, having a remnant of the Spirit? And why one? He seeks godly offspring. Therefore, take heed to your spirit, and let none deal treacherously with the wife of his youth. Obviously, I was not talking about him treating me treacherously, but he didn't get it. He's like, why did you send me this verse? I was like, oh, okay, do I have to spell it out? Godly offspring, offspring? Offspring? Go. So finally he got it. So I was trying to be funny, but that's another thing that people fail to, see that as very important aspect of marriage. A lot of couples, young couples I've heard that they don't want children. They simply feel like we're happy the way we are. It's much easier that way. But God really intended for us as parents become couples first, and then being a family to bring up offsprings to glorify God. And we obviously glorify God in our bodies. I know some of you, actually, I'm here today, not necessarily trying to, I guess I can't really impart anything new, because all this thing, I'm sure many of you know better than me. I mean, some of you married much, much longer than me. I feel really inadequate standing here. Just a little bit of my, I think it's a lot of my own reflection. But I think the young people can see that we have happily married couples in our church. And I think that, and then we become inspiration to our next generation. And I think that's why a motivation for us who are married to strive harder to have a better relationship, so that we become an envy for the younger generation, and they say, I want to grow up, I want to marry, I just want to be like them. You know, you don't have to like come to church and they're all like hugging each other and then all over each other and say, we love each other. You don't have to. They will see that. They will see that in your lives, and they can see, you know, how you work together, the way you speak to each other. And I catch myself. There are so many times that, and I just hate it. There are times when I just, you know, when I talk to other sisters, when people start complaining, I don't know if you do that, when people start complaining, do you catch yourself say, oh yeah, me too. Oh yeah, they start complaining about their husbands. Oh yeah, TJ too. Oh, let me tell you more. You know, I want to beat them. You know, it's like, I have worse case than you. You know, and I go, what have I done? I'm painting a false picture of my husband when it was just a very small fraction. And obviously, if TJ were to go out and tell people about my faults, oh, I don't think anybody want to talk to me anymore because I have so many. You know, so I think we really need to learn to build each other up, especially when they're not around. I mean, obviously we need to do that in front of each other, but with our spouses, every word can either hurt or build. And I think as husbands and wives, that's something we need to kind of control our tongues. Here I'd like to just share a word on singleness. So 1 Corinthians, let's turn to 1 Corinthians 7, verses 8 and 9. As I've mentioned, it is God's design for men and women to marry. But at the same time, I do believe that there is a gift of singleness, as we know beloved Apostle Paul was. 1 Corinthians 7, verses 8 and 9. But I say to the married and to the widows, it is good for them if they remain even as I am. But if they cannot exercise self-control, let them marry, for it is better to marry than to burn with passion. And also verses 32 and 35. Paul had encouraged young people or widows to remain single as they are, because you are more carefree to serve God. Obviously, he's not saying that, you know, yes, don't marry at all. But he says very specifically, if you cannot exercise self-control, because God gave us the desire. You know, it's not our fault that we feel attracted to the opposite sex. That's natural. But the thing is, if you don't think you have the gift of singleness, which I really think that's a very special gift, then marriage is definitely something we need to seriously consider and prayerfully consider, because it's something that affects your whole life, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later. But at the same time, because one point in time in my life, when I was getting closer to the big 3-0, and I'm still very, very single, I seriously thought about, I say, maybe God just want to give me the gift of singleness. Maybe I should just accept the fact that nobody wants me. You know, I'll just be an old maid for life. And my mom said, I don't want to hear anything like this. Oh, you're 不孝的小孩子. She's like terrified that even having that kind of thought. But God had a better plan, which if we have time, we'll go through. We'll probably talk about my testimony on how God had brought me together with TJ, which is I really thank God for. This is just a little line, our lifeline. Why is marriage so important? It never really occurred to me. I think most people fall for single. They usually fall between this age. I mean, it could be a little bit early or a little bit later, but nowadays, people usually around get married about 30, because I had prayed to God. I said, God, before I was married, before I even had, you know, anybody even mention anything, God, if it's at all possible, please let me get married before I turn 30, because my mom would think I'll be like old maid. Just for my mom's sake, you know, just for her faith, because she was rather new as a believer at that time. I said, to help in my mother's faith, let me get married before I'm 30. So thank God, God heard my prayer. I got married 1 month before the turn 30. 1 month. So, and look how many years we spent together with our spouse. And not only that, have you realized that he affects your eternity? It's forever. That person will affect you forever. That person can either stop you going into that direction or help you going into that direction. This is how serious marriage is to each one of us. I mean, you think, oh, just I'm going to fall in love and find somebody and then I'll be happy. It's not. It's not just about this life. We're not talking about just here and now, but we're talking about forever and ever. So it's a summary of that graph. We spend with our parents and then we're with our spouse much longer, which is about 65% of our entire life. It's so such a something so serious. You would think people pay attention and people be prepared, but you know, the statistic says that 50% of present marriages fail, one out of two. And the second, the people who remarry, the divorce rate is even higher. And those people who have premarital sex relations, when they marry, their divorce rate is much higher too. Isn't that kind of weird? You already tried out being living together. Shouldn't you know better? And you know, once you get married, it's like you test drive your car, right? You test drive a car, it's like, I like this car. I think I like it. Or, you know, I don't think it will work. Because once you get married, you think that must be the one you stay with. No, not really. Not really. If you look around the statistics, it tells you that it does not require for you to have that kind of premarital relationship between, you know, sexual relationship before marriage, in order for you to have a strong marriage. It takes a lot more, and which we will talk about later. So, I don't know if you can read this thing, very small print on the bottom. I just want to let you know, all these material I've taken from different sources and from my own experiences, but this slide and the next slide, I've taken it from a series of teaching, videos teaching and the CD teachings from Love, Sex, and Lasting Relationship by Chip Ingram. He's involved with a Life on the Edge ministry. Anybody have heard him? Chip Ingram? No? Hey, that's okay. But I found this to be really helpful as far as looking at things from different perspectives. Now, would anybody like to just kind of guess, what do you think the world's perspective on a lasting relationship? What would you think? Just think about all the Hollywood movies. Okay, just how the Hollywood movies, when two people get together, what are the steps? What are the steps? What's the first step? Huh? You don't know? Oh, well, thank God you don't watch any Hollywood movies, right? All these romantic movies, you know, romantic comedy or whatever. What is the first thing happens in any plot? Huh? Okay, the day and then? A guy and a girl and then? Huh? They go to bed? Okay. You're kind of a little too fast with the movie. usually something involves before they actually jump into bed, they kind of think they are in love, right? They fall in love, right? Right? Well, sometimes that's not required. No, nowadays, that's not required. Did you know, I've read the statistics, this recent studies on the teen sexual behavior. There's an increasing number of hookups. They call it hookups because the first time they meet, these are like high school kids, junior high, the first time they meet, all they want is sex. Emotion, love is not involved. It's like, oh, sad, you know. But okay, they fall in love, right? The four steps in the Hollywood. They find the right person, a guy and a girl, okay? And they fall in love. And then what happens? Which starts with an F also. There's F, three Fs. Find the right person, okay? And then they fall in love. Because usually the plot is like, oh, this girl goes out with different guys and none of them, you know, really click. And then finally she finds the right person and then she falls in love. And then what happens? Yes?
Forget their names.
Oh, that's sad. Although that could happen. You know, it's a one night stand and thing, you know. But normally they would fix their hopes and dreams on that person for your future for me. This is the man of my dream. This is the girl of my dream. I shall be happy forever after. Right?
Yeah, I like that.
You like that? You like that kind of story? Yeah, that's, I mean, you don't have to think about Hollywood movie. I it's so sad. I look at all the Disney, Disney cartoons, Cinderella, Snow White, all these things my kids are watching. It's like, oh, that's their story, right? They find the right person, they fall in love, and then it's like they live happily ever after. But is that real life? Not really, right? Oh, okay. So what happens if these things, they find out, okay, so after they go out together, after they sleep together or whatever, they find out it's really not working out. So they fail, they start all over, right? I mean, that's kind of, we see that in the movie, but then that's kind of in the real life. A lot of people go through that. We see that in some people's lives, that they go through that kind of cycle. And I know some people who are, of course, not in the church, but they go through this kind of cycle. And it's just so sad because I see, especially the girl, you know, get all heartbroken. She's given all herself, everything. And then the guy says, sorry, you're not the one. Bye. And then so she has to pick herself up, start all over. Where am I going to find this right person? You know, she's looking here, looking there, going on a date, you know, putting ads, I don't know, whatever the things that they do. You know, it's just a really, really sad thing. But let's see, what is God's prescription to lasting relationships? Let's turn to Ephesians chapter 5. Verses 1 and 2. Can we have someone with a strong voice read that, please? Loud voice. And can a brother read that? Any brother? Anybody? Sure. Thank you.
1 and 2.
1, 2. Thank you. So according to Ephesians 5, verses 1 and 2, instead of focusing on finding the right person, we become the right person by imitating God. Next, we learn to walk in love. Go back to being the right person. Have you anybody heard about date Jesus for a year before you actually go on a date? Okay, no, that's okay. Well, oh, okay, thank you. I probably heard it from you, but she raised her hand. I think I heard it from you. But I think that's, before even I heard that thing, I really wish I had heard this message earlier when I was in my earlier years. I didn't really know a lot of these things. And I think I did a lot of trial and error. And really by God's grace that He had protected my heart, where I did not have to suffer so much until finally He guided me to the right way. But being the right person is just simply focusing ourselves with our relationships with God. And I really thank God that I had a period of time when I was single, when I was working, when I was by myself, living without my parents, my family around. I had that time to spend with myself and then really find out who I was and trying to think about what God wants from me. And I think it was that period that I really started praying, because I had no family around. I was like, I really felt lonely. I felt like I needed somebody. I think I was a late boomer. I really didn't realize I needed someone until all my friends were getting married. It's like, oh, I think I better start looking or do something. Because my mom was so worried. It's like, oh no, my daughter's just going to be an old maid. Oh, man, she's constantly worrying about it. But you know, I was like, oh no, I'm happy. I'm okay. I'm doing my things. Until finally one day, it's like, if I don't do something, I think I'm really just end up an old maid. So, but thank God though, gave me that understanding and helped me to come to that point. Also, the third point is that we hinge our hope on God and seek to please Him through our relationship with Him. So on your handout, I guess that's the process. Okay, on the process, you could fill that out. 1, 2, 3. Oh, I'm sorry, that's not, that's efficient. Scratch that. That's on the bottom, very bottom, the right perspective. The right perspective, Ephesians 5, 1 and 2. So we're hinging our hopes on God and seek to please Him through our relationship with Him. As we're doing that, if things do not work, we repeat steps 1, 2, 2, 2 and 3. But don't feel like if things didn't work out as you're trying to follow God's way, then it's like, okay, you know, God's not working, you know, this doesn't work. No, you go back, if you just continue going through the process and go back and ask God, so what did I not learn? What did I not do right? You know, God, what is it that you want me to do better this time? And if you continue to draw into this direction, you will find that God will bring that right person to you, and God will open up doors, and God will just help you in finding that mate for you. Sorry. Are you finished? Do you need to go back? No? It's pretty something. Okay. So from the eyes of God, I'd like to just mostly speak to those who are still not married. Mainly, actually for myself, this year I'm going to turn to 42. When I turned 40, 2 years ago, it didn't really hit me. I didn't realize I was getting into the big 40, midlife. No, not until I was 41, because the zero is nothing, right? There's no value zero, so it didn't hit me. Until 41, I was like, oh, 41, one. I'm getting old. I was in denial for that whole year until 41 hit me, and I say, I'm getting old. So, God, what did you want me to do again? You know, I start really examining myself, and I think it's a process. It's really a process. I guess when you're younger, you kind of ask that kind of question, but you don't really think a whole lot. Because there's so many things going on, so many exciting things, and takes your focus away from God. But that has become something that it just becoming more and more, at the senses, I'm just more aware or asking God constantly, what is His plan for my life? Because I want to do what is right and meet the plan of God. And am I willing to fulfill God's plan? So once I find out, once I have a kind of an idea, the question comes, am I willing? Am I willing to fulfill that plan? Because if I'm not, then even if God told me something, then I say, but God, I don't think I can do it. I really don't think so. You know, then God could be screaming at your ears and you don't want to do it, then He's going to stop talking to you. God's not going to be talking to you unless you're willing. Because I have brothers or sisters, yeah, I'm praying, I'm asking God for His direction, for His guidance. But then I'll always ask that person, are you willing to accept whatever God is telling you? Or do you already have an answer set in your mind? Only if answer is B, then I'll take it. If it's A, then You know, then God's not going to be talking to you. God's not going to show you or reveal to you. So the same thing for our marriage or our choosing our spouse or who to go out with. So do I want to glorify God through my life? That is, do I think that my life should reflect God's work through me? Do I want to become a living testimony? Because as teachers, as parents, we carry a lot of weight in the lives of our students, not because of what we say, but the life that we live. And it's startling. It just scares me when I see my children doing things that I do or say the things that I do. And I say, scary. That's how ugly I am. You know, because they reflect me. They're just my reflection. It's just so scary to see them do the things that I do. I mean, my daughter will be talking to my son, just like, you should do this. I was like, oh boy, do I talk to my daughter like this? You know, Because they imitate us. We don't have to tell them to imitate us. They will, whether you like it or not. So your students will too. Your students will too. And so we have to examine constantly every aspect of our life. It's not just on Saturday, but every minute of our lives. So finally, we're kind of fast. I was going to do this process thing. The second part, let's see. We have until 7:50? Okay. We'll do an activity. And I need 6 volunteers. 3 brothers and 3 sisters. 3 brothers and 3 sisters. If you do not volunteer, I'll call on you. Those people who just called, please stand up. Since you're a volunteer, somebody else might as well volunteer yourself. Okay, Ken. All right, thank you. All right. 3 brothers. Okay, we need 3 sisters now. Can we just have these 3 sisters? Since you're sitting right here, I'm so sorry. Since you're right here. Okay, what I need, may I have you also to help me? Really, you got the easiest job. What you need to do is you will distribute these names. Obviously, brothers' names to brothers, sisters' names to sisters. And when I said okay, then you can bring them back. But I want you to bring them as far as away from here so they don't hear us. Okay? Make sure they can't hear us. Okay? And then when I say okay, then come back. Oh, you too. Okay, this is what we'll do as soon as they walk out. Bye. Can we close that door? Because okay. There's not a mic outside where they can hear. Okay. This is what will happen. After they come back, I'll have them to pair up like a brother and a sister, brother and sister, 3 pairs. First, I'll ask them to pair up by themselves. We'll just let them pair up by themselves. The second time, I'll just say, okay, after they pair up, I'll give them like a minute time. Okay, and then they will pair up. And then and then I'm gonna ask them, why did you pair up the way you paired up? They'll just give whatever reason, okay? Which doesn't matter, it's just for fun, okay? And then I'll ask them to shuffle around. And then at that time, I need your help to, you'll be the helpers to help them pair up. Or if it's too difficult, maybe 2 people will volunteer to pair them up. You can just say, okay, you pair up with her, and then she will go with him, you know. And just come up with any rationale, any reason you want, okay? You can go, oh, because their names look better together, or because they're same height, or I just feel like it that way. You know, whatever reason, that's fine, okay? And then I'm going to tell you the actual pairs that I had in mind because I made up the game, right? Okay. Okay. Do you understand what you need to do? So if you all want to advise them at the same time, that's fine too. Confuse them, that's fine. Because that serves the purpose of what I'm trying to say also. They can come. Is there a door stopper here? Oh, okay. Thank you. May we? Oh, I'm sorry, you're not sitting down. I'm so sorry. You thought that was it? I'm sorry. You'll be standing right here. Can you please all sit right here? Okay, Dan, Joe, Sam. Everybody look their names, okay? Now, I will give you 1 minute's time. I'm sorry, I'm not standing in the right place. Okay, for you to pair up, you need to pair up brother, sister, brother, sister, brother, sister. Okay, 1 minute time. When I say, and after you pair up, you need to come up with a reason why you paired up, the way you paired up. Okay, ready? Go. Go. One minute. Thirty seconds. Twenty seconds. Okay. Oh, very good. Okay. So you just pair it up because you pick a number. Number. Okay. Okay. All right. Sounds good. Now, I need you to shuffle around. Shuffle around so you change your combination. Okay, just good. Good. Everybody move around a little bit. Okay. Now, what happens is you will have your fellow brothers and sisters to help you pair up this time. So, I'll also give you a minute time, and at the end of the minute time, they will pair you up. Maybe, you know, differently or whatever. Okay? Is everybody ready? Go. Everybody's silent. 50 seconds left. I mean, okay. Gone.
Joe
and Mary, Joseph and Mary.
Oh,
Sam and
Oh, somebody knows.
She's
not 1 minute. Very good. Good job. You know
there's
what?
There's actually a right answer?
Yes. Yes. There's actually a right answer because I made up the game. I made up the comment. You know what? And amazingly, you guys are in the right match, the right pair. Wow. Thanks to Pastor Young. Thank you very much. You did a great job. Okay. So what is all this? You may keep the name if you like. It's your souvenir. Okay. What was that exercise about? Because normally when we go from point A, which is being single, to point B, being married, there are normally three, processes. And I think someone already mentioned it before. One of them would be, what do you normally do before you get married? Okay, well, what would you call that process of finding the person? Okay, right. What do you call that process?
Hunting.
Hunting, okay. What is the more civilized way of saying that? Okay, all right. Ooh, other different ways to say that. Okay, so you actually go out on a? Thank you, you date, right? That's a normal, right? But this is something I believe I heard, who is this someone? Oh, Brother Matthew, he says, during the time when my wife and I courted, so he actually wore the word courtship, okay? I don't know if everybody is familiar with that term, but that's okay, we'll talk about that. This is a courtship is a process that may involve or, you know, may or may not involve a middle person. And finally, the dreaded introduction. That's something a lot of young people says don't ever happen, because we're in the 21st century after all, right? No, I mean, this is like an old age, you know, people don't do that. So this is I guess the normal. I mean, can anybody think about any other ways? Any other way besides these three ways? I'm sorry? Prearranged. Wow, I haven't thought about that. Were your marriage prearranged? Okay. Do you know anybody who had a prearranged marriage? They still do that present day? Yeah, there's a sister in Garden Grove who has a son, my daughter's age, a year older. So we kind of joke, you know, around, say, oh, you know, we don't mind being in-laws if our kids would like each other. So we start, you know, we're just joking, and then from then on, we would call each other like, oh, Anna the 丈母娘. You know, it's like, oh, the mother-in-law, you know, it's like, my in-laws are, you know, we start just joking, but it's like, oh, that's actually not a bad idea, because I like the in-laws, I know their families. I start brainwashing Anna. I say, Anna, when you grow up, you just listen, mommy and daddy, you know, to arrange you somebody for you in the future, okay? Okay, mommy. For now, she's only 9, you know, who knows. But anyway, you know what, we're going to take a 10-minute break, and then we're going to come back and continue with this. Okay, take your bathroom break. So let's bow our heads and pray in silence real quickly. Let's bow our head and pray in silence and ask the Lord to lead also the second session. Hallelujah. Amen. In the name of Jesus. Hey, we just took a break. Hello. Okay. Someone was asking me, so what was that exercise about? And I beg for your patience, because I will use that throughout my, I guess, explanation for the following concepts. I just, you know, came up with this continuum, because this is how I see what the difference between dating, courtship, introduction, and how this. I'm sorry, I did not put prearranged marriage, because that's kind of unlikely for my circle of our influence here. But how we arrive to marriage, and that's something that I think it would be good to help our youth, our next generation, your students, to kind of start thinking about different possibilities. Because I think most kids will say, if I don't date, how am I going to get married? I mean, they just think that's the only option. But I like to suggest there are some other options. And let's see, I would put dating on one continuum, and then introduction to the other. Because most people think dating is kind of, you're kind of free for all. You go out, you check out, you just do whatever to you find out the person, your future spouse. I mean, that's how you get to know people after all, right? I mean, that's how I thought. When people first even approach me, even suggest, even my mom is like, can you take a look at this picture? What do you think? And now I just totally abhor. It's like, don't even think about it, you know? Don't even, come on, you know, don't try that kind of stuff, you know. So I feel this is like the opposite continuum, because one is a total freedom, whereas introduction is like the opposite, where you're just being like bound hand and feet, and you just like delivered to the slaughterhouse. I know that was my idea of introduction. You know, you have no choice. You're just like being told, and then you don't even know that person. You're stuck forever. I mean, My primary thought about that, because my parents' marriage were arranged. They did not know each other. He was in Taiwan, my mom was in Korea. Oh, she's Chinese living in Korea. But isn't that amazing? I married a Korean. But anyway, so she grew up in Korea, and because my father-in-law had always wanted to go back to China. I mean, those people who fled from communists, until my mother's generation, they were waiting someday to go home. There's like the closest place to home, because they came out from Shandong. So the closest place to home is Korea. So they waited in Korea for like years and years waiting to go home. So when my mom was time to get married, my grandfather thought, I have to find a son-in-law who is from the same province. That was the criteria. If there is a man that came from the same province, that's it. You know, so that's how my mom got married with my father, and they had a terrible marriage. Not only them, but all their generation. So I said, forget it. Don't even talk about introduction or you know, arranged marriage. You know, it's not going to work for me. So, but then what courtship is, really, it's a process where you become very serious. Even if you're dating or you're being introduced, actually, the picture I was painting about introduction is very misunderstood. And nowadays, especially what's going on, you can talk to Brother William there. You know, and others, I mean, Sister Patrie can also share. And I will probably have time to share with you. But you know, everybody's case is different. It's not what, you know, people think, because, but then we all arrive to a place where we call courtship, where you're seriously considering about marriage, where the sole purpose for your getting to know each other. And that word comes back way back into the where there's knight, you know, the back the 17th century or even earlier, where gentlemen would come to the ladies' houses and call on the lady and actually court her in her house with the presence of the family, when they would just get to know each other with the purpose of proposal to marriage. You know, that's where the word came from. So it's a very proper way, I mean, for any couple to get together for a lasting relationship. I just like to talk about some of the nature of dating nowadays. If you disagree anywhere, if you have anything else to add, please feel free. So for me, dating is, I think for most people, it's a time when you check out one another, and you just, kids say, we just like to hang out, we just like to be with other kids. I mean, for them, it's a very commonplace thing. They start dating as young as 10. They feel like they're ready to go on a date. And they just have fun. They feel like just spend time together with another person. It's no big deal. I mean, what's the big deal about dating, right? And they feel, they want to be fulfilled with the desire to be loved. I mean, it's kind of sad to say, but they're... many teens that they don't get that kind of attention, especially fatherly love. And I think right now I appeal to the fathers that what your relationship with your daughters really affects a lot on the way your daughter will see her future husband. And a lot of times girls, that they just need someone to treasure them, to feel, they just need to have that kind of love. I mean, it of course it's good to have the mother's, you know, bond, which is a lot of times very natural for daughter and moms to bond. But the fathers need to play a very important role in how the girl, after she grows up, and when you can tell that there is a very wonderful relationship when the daughter grows up, I want to find a man just like my daddy. It's very natural. So if a father has done a very good job in nurturing your daughter, then she will very naturally feel that way. But if she did not get that, a lot of times she will find it somewhere else, and normally at the wrong places, because she just feels she need to have that need to be fulfilled. And to satisfy sexual needs. Nowadays, kids are so much bombarded by all the sexual content that's going on, even in Disney movies. Disney cartoons. I can't believe in Jungle Book. I don't know if you watch Jungle Book. It's about this silly boy, you know, lost in the jungle, and he can talk to the animals, right? In the end, is it Jungle Book? I think so. The jungle, he meets a girl, right? And the girl will be like, flirting like this, and then, you know, like winking at him, and then he will be like, oh, he's like all passing out. In Jungle Book, in Disney movies, they already have that kind of, you know, implied, you know, the kind of, the just that sexual kind of connotation in there. I mean, I'm hoping my kids just don't get it, you know, at that time yet. but it's everywhere. It's just everywhere. So because their senses are so already stimulated, a lot of times they will find some kind of venue. And no teens under. Okay, plug her ears so that she can't hear that. Kids as young as 10, they begin oral sex at school, in the bathrooms. And it's so sad to say because they think that's not sex. They think, you know, it's no big deal. And that's a safe thing. They feel like, oh, I'm not gonna get pregnant. You know, there's actually no contact, not directly, not penetration. So they don't think that's a sexual act. But they go through a lot of these sexual acts, but because they feel so stimulated by everything, and that's all they talk about a lot of times in school. And if we're as parents, as teachers, not aware of the messages that they're getting, and it's they're so easily led astray, and they want to experiment. And that's what I was talking about, the nature of dating oftentimes is very casual. They don't think that as a long-term commitment. And sometimes they get to this boyfriend-girlfriend relationship. There's a teenage girl, what, 14, 15? Oh, I think I have like 17 ex-boyfriends. 17 by age 15, age 15. I mean, for her, it's like, oh, no big deal. You know, so their emotions are numbed. They're so saturated with all these things that are going on. You just wonder, their heart is so calloused already. Do they ever feel anything? Can they experience true love? I wonder. But the dating, I think, have anybody heard about I Kissed Dating Goodbye by Joshua Harris, the book? That's where I heard it from, but she only, but she raised her hand. That's okay. For those who are still single, or for those parents who are probably want to counsel teens who are in the process of checking out, they call it. This will be a good book to consider. They call I Kissed Dating Goodbye by Joshua Harris. And his second book is called When Boy Meets Girl, right? Or just Boy Meets Girl? Not Even Him. That's his third book, right? I'm talking about, he actually talked about when the process of when he met his wife, right? So this this Christian young man at age 25, he decided that he had gone through so much pain from his dating experiences. He decided that he will stop dating. He will just simply say no more dating, and until he's ready. So he made that commitment between him and God. So, and he said it just really helped him to focus on who God wanted him to be. He really focused his relationship with God and again, really involved with church work during those years. And then slowly as one day he become, I guess he feel like he was more mature, and he feel like it was God's timing. And events that happened that let him feel like, okay, now is the time. So what do I do? So he went through a process of what he called it's like a courtship. So he actually talked about that in the second book, and he strongly recommend courtship simply because the misconception of dating. Now, I'm not saying dating is bad. I'm not saying that that's a big no-no, because I came to understand all this, you know, especially when I was going through college, everybody's going out and dating. I dated, and I did not know all what's involved, you know, because you get these ideas of what other people are doing, and that's what you're supposed to do. So it's good to have some references where you can get different perspectives, especially biblical perspective, people who love God, who wanted to do God's way, and try to see different perspectives. So dating is one thing, and then he talked about courtship. He felt like courting is when you go out, oh, let me go to that. What is courtship? Okay, I Kiss Dating Goodbye and When Boy Meets Girl by Joshua Harris. That's the next step after the introduction or dating. By the way, just now when we had the 6 volunteers here, we gave them 1 minute time to just pair up, okay? Because under the time and pressure, they just kind of, you know, paired up anyway they wanted, and that was not my original intent. And what by that is, a lot of times when we are dating, we don't know. I mean, somebody had asked me a question saying, how do I know that person is the right one? How do I know? You don't. You really don't. When you're dating, I guess.
Well, it's kind of like, I was thinking about, like, a woman where you're saying, like, I got 30 years.
Yes, you feel pressure. You feel pressure. I gotta find somebody now, right? You feel pressured because you see all the people around you. So you don't have that time to wait for God, right? You just feel like, I really need to get married, right? Otherwise, you know, people be laughing at me, or there's something wrong with me, you know, I gotta do something. So you become, they will be like, oh, we only had a minute, so we draw a lot, you know. So sometimes that happens. Sometimes you see people, they get together simply because they had to go. They feel like they just need to go together, okay? But then there are times when before they're actually ready, they just go out because they feel like, oh, I think I like that person. You know, I just want to check her out. Or, you know, I think he or she is a fun person to be around. And people go through dating relationship with, a lot of times, not exactly the correct idea. And normally it's not very serious. You don't really think for a long-term commitment, right? This is some more of a short-term thing. But courtship is very different in the sense that it's a step further. Usually you don't, you know, when you just start dating, people don't think about, okay, so when is your wedding date? You know, people don't ask you that kind of question, you know, when you just start dating. But when you're in courtship, people know because you perhaps I've known this person for a long time, and you know people see you as already as a couple together, and you have been able to set a boundary. Oh, that's another book I would recommend. On the other hand of I Kiss Dating Goodbye, who would say I will not date at all, there is also another book called Boundaries in Dating. Boundaries in Dating. By Dr. Townsend, T-O-W-N-S-E-N-D, I think. Townsend. Is it? Patrick, do you remember? Yeah. But the book is Boundary. He has a series of books on boundary. And he's also a Christian psychologist, Christian counselor. That he used biblical ways to say dating is fine as long as you can set boundaries, very clear boundaries, before even you go out dating. So that's another perspective where they actually, in their book, they directly address to the issues that Joshua Harris had brought up. and they kind of bring very different perspectives. So those are two books to it will be good for you to consider or to advise your, I mean, of course, obviously you need to read first and see if it's appropriate for your teens or your students to read, or you can, you know, discuss some of the issues in there. But what was I going to talk about? Oh, okay. That's something later we're going to talk about. Courtship with a specific intent of marriage, and they may involve a middle person, which means in the case of introduction, if you're being introduced by a third party, for example, the marriage coordinator, you usually get to meet. You probably email each other, call each other, and then you eventually get to meet. And when you meet, you have a very specific intent that we're planning for our marriage. And you discuss of many of the things and see if things will work. So that's courtship. So, and you usually have a more specific boundary because you're not exactly emotionally involved. I feel there's a benefit in courtship in the sense where, of course, this is from a perspective of if you're coming from being introduced by a marriage coordinator or any caring member, does not have to be a marriage coordinator, it could be a pastor, you know, just a loving brother or sister. They hook you up somehow and then you email each other, you feel like, okay, that's doable, you know, you talk on the phone, that person's not too bad, I can talk, we can meet. And then because you're not involved emotionally, so you can set boundaries for yourself. You know the places you don't want to go, but if you're already emotionally involved, you feel a certain attraction. You feel like you just melt in his presence, you know, or her presence, you know, whatever he or she says, you just say yes, okay. You know, then you can't set boundaries in him. It's very, very difficult. So that's something you need to do way before you feel involved. And then going into introduction. But, however, there are success stories. Talk to Brother William. He's a living example. And Sister Patrie, she's one. And everybody have very different stories. Does not always work in a set formula. But I'd just like to share really quickly about my experience, because I told you ahead of the time that I was raised here for many years, I left Taiwan after I got out of elementary school. And then my family moved to South America before we came to the States. So I really think I'm more Western in thinking. And I told you about my parents' marriage. Theirs did not work. None of her generation worked. So I feel like, why should arranged marriage or introduced marriage should ever work? It's not going to work for me. Never. Until I came to know the Lord. I came to know God during my college years, at a year where I was really trying to find myself. And it was probably, perhaps, maybe 6 or 7 years before I came to believe that God start to teach me, and just through many, God's been really, really gracious to me, because I lived in a small town in Texas where it's about 90 miles away from church, and there was not that many members around. And my family were not believers at that time. And so God had specifically just taught me many things himself. And one very important lesson I learned is how I trust God in my marriage. Because I pray, when I start working, I really prayed for, I really started to pray. At that time, I was probably 28. Yeah, I was 27, 28. And the most important, I guess the most impressionable advice that I got from the church sisters are those sisters who had married non-believers. And they would come to church, and they would come and see me, you know, and they would tell me, Alice, don't make the same mistakes as we have made. And that was enough. They don't have to tell me the difficulties they go through. They don't have to tell me and share about of the hardship they have at home. And I could see in their eyes the sadness. I don't want that kind of married life, you know, that kind of struggle. But you know what, little did I know, even though I had that back in my mind, in school, there's this guy that I met, I was getting old, you know, there's only 1 minute left. My biological clock is ticking. I may not be able to have kids if I marry too late. You know, I feel that pressure, and my mom start, you know, keep on bringing me pictures. What do you think about this person? What do you think, you know? I was like, oh no. I'm talking about pressure, you know? So I said, okay, I'll just go out with this guy, you know, I met at school. You know, so those are things that I feel many of us face. Many of us go through that. And by the grace of God, He protected my heart where I just did not feel emotionally involved with this person. And I really thank God that at first I thought, hey, I can bring this person to church. That's pretty good. I'm doing God's work by bringing another person to church. Hey, that's a very good reason. So, you know what? At first this guy was like, yeah, going along, yeah, talking about God, you know, he's like, okay. When he comes to church, he'll be waiting in the parking lot. He'll not even go in. He was like, okay, so I guess it's not working very well. You know, after a while, I could see my face start just dropping. You know, and I thought I could just bring this person to church to come to know God, but I could see that. I mean, at that time, I guess I couldn't really see it. But one day, I really thank God just woke me up, and I say, no, I can't continue that kind of relationship. It's not helping me getting closer to God. If this is not helping me to get closer to God, I'm not even married. I'm not even serious with this person, and it's already like this. I mean, imagine if later I'm more emotionally attached. So I just say, okay, I don't think we should see each other anymore. You know, I return all the stuff that I have borrowed, the books or video, whatever I borrow, and return it to him. And I really thank God. I didn't feel like sad or sorrowful or bad. You know, it's like, next day it's like, okay, that's done. Okay, what's next? You know, I really thank God that God had to protect my heart, because I feel the best gift that I have given to my husband was that I can tell him, TJ, you're the only man I ever loved. You're my first love and my last. And I think that's the best I could give, because this is my heart. That's the best I can give him. And I wish that all of you can treasure that part of you, because I know a youth before age 20, he's got so emotionally involved with this sister, I guess. Yes. And he wanted to marry her, but he was so young. She was still, like, what, high school? Yeah, he was only 20. He was still in school too. But he's so ready. He was just so ready. He's like, I'm ready to get married. I can, you know, do this and that. We have all this plan. Do you think the girl's mom's gonna say okay? No, of course not. It's like, are you crazy? She's not even in college yet, you know? So what happened? They had to stop seeing each other. And he was so torn by that. And he says, you know what? He actually went through a clinical depression. He has suffered anxiety. I mean, he was so broken up. It was just so sad to see someone to go through that unnecessarily. That he had given up giving his heart too early. And the second time around, when he was involved into another relationship, you know, sometime later, he told me, you know, Alice, I feel kind of bad to this girl that I'm going out with right now, because all these loving words I've said, I'm telling her, I've told somebody else. So I'm not being really truthful when I say, you're my only love, or whatever, you know, loving words that he wanted to say. you know, he said, I feel I'm cheating. I'm not being truthful to her. And that's what happens when you start too early. And that is something that it's a sad thing. But you know, we see that happen. That's why I said a lot of times statistics show us that even those people who were sexually intimate before marriage, after they get married, they don't feel that. You know what? The survey said they don't have as much fulfillment and sexual satisfaction, simply because they know that, you know, if this girl could do that with me, I'm sure she may have done it with other people. Maybe she just didn't tell me. You know, you lose that kind of trust. You lose that kind of the bond that you would have when you know that you have saved yourself until the end. Oh, anyway, oh, I was supposed to tell you my story. Okay, real quick. Anyway, so I've been praying, but not really serious because there's things going on. I say, okay, maybe just. Okay. Where was I? Okay, I'll stop with this guy. Right. Okay, and then after that, I began to have better understanding about myself, my own weaknesses, and that's when I guess praying a little bit more serious and ask God for guidance and for help in this aspect. And I can't say it's an audible voice, but God told me very specifically, or God had somehow let me know that He will find someone for me. As to how, when, what, where, who, I didn't know, but God will provide someone. So I just held on to that, you know, promise. And I say, okay, God, and I'm going to trust in You. I don't know when this is going to happen. I'll just keep on waiting, right? There are so many times I was so tempted, especially when I was after work, I would go home, I'll be alone by myself, bored to tears. And I wanted so much to call up someone. You know, maybe this guy that I went to this Japanese class, there was this guy kind of cute. I still have his number. Maybe I can call him up. You know, I was so tempted. I was so tempted to do that. But then God would remind me, say, you know, I promised you. I promised you. And my mom, obviously, she's so anxious. It's like, oh, big 30 is coming up, right? She would start to say, Mom, God will provide someone. And then she would go, don't you know, Alice, God helped those who help themselves. Don't you know that? Do you suppose He's just going to drop somebody in front of your door? If you don't go out, you don't meet people, how are you going to, how do you know? I don't know, Mom. I don't know. But I know God's going to find someone for me. She goes, I hope you're right. I hope my daughter's going to be an old maid. She was so stressed, I guess, but she tried her best to not to be too, too anxious, because she knows I'll just kind of shut her off. But then I can't really tell you how long it has been until I had an accident. I had a really serious car accident, and in which I could have very well been dead. The car totally flipped over, landed upside down, smashed the whole top of the car, and lo and behold, I kept my head, I don't know how. When I went back to see my heart, the junkyard person says, you mean this was your car? I said, yes. I went to fetch my things that I left. And miraculously, my wallet was still in there. I found my wallet. But they say, I've seen people who were in car wrecks less damaging than yours. They were gone. They died. They didn't survive. So, you know, so I pray one day to God, I say, God, why did you let me go through this suffering? Because I did suffer injuries, and it took me a while after a physical therapy and things for me to recover. I asked God, why? You know, why this thing happened to me? And He let me know that I am preparing you something for the future. And what was that? I didn't know. Okay, I didn't know. So fast forward, maybe almost a year later, after my accident. In one summer after spiritual convocation, I was driving Elder John, TJ's dad, to airport. And on our way to the airport, he suddenly asked me, "So Alice, is there somebody meaningful in your life?" I said, "Oh, it's kind of weird coming out of an elder." I said, "No." "Well, what are your criteria for looking for your future spouse?" "Ooh, this is a hard test. I have to find the right words to say." But actually, before that, I have asked myself many, many times, what is it that I'm looking for? Because otherwise I can't pray to God, right? I need to know exactly specific request to God when I'm looking for my future spouse. And I totally honestly said, my only requirement is someone who truly loves God. He goes, "Really? You mean you would even consider Korean?" And I said, "Well, why not? I mean, in God's kingdom, we're like all people, right? We're one family anyway. It doesn't matter. Actually, Korean's probably more familiar to me because my mom grew up in Korea. You know, so I knew what kimchi was, and you know, and you know, it's not that strange to me." So he goes, "Oh, really?" And he was silent after that. I was like, "Okay, should I ask him why he asked me that?" Okay, no, I'm just gonna be quiet. So he mentioned nothing. He went back to LA at that time. I was in Texas at that time. So a week later, church sister called me. "Alice, what do you think about Elder John's son? You know, is it possible introduce you to getting to know each other more and then eventually get married?" I say, "What? I didn't even know he had a son. He never mentioned that to me. Maybe he did, but I never paid attention." He said, "You know, you actually met, like, you know, a year ago." I said, "Really?" He said, "Yeah, I have a picture." You know, that which was true, but I had no memory of that at all, because he is so quiet and shy. And I did not even remember meeting, because people come to church, visit church, you know, people come and go, and I'm terrible with people's names. "I'm sorry if I meet you next time and I can't remember your name. I'm not very good." So I said, I don't remember at all. Until she showed me the picture, said, "Yeah, this is the guy. What do you think?" "I don't know anything about this guy." "Pray, Alice, pray about it." I said, "Okay, I'll pray." So she didn't tell me when she'll be asking about it. So I just said, "Okay, I'll pray. But I didn't really, really seriously pray about it until one day she asked me, "So, well, Alice, what do you think? They're waiting." I said, "Waiting for what?" "For your answer. What do you think? Do you want to, you know, get to know him?" I said, "Oh, that, yes. Let me get back to you." So I say, "Oh God, I really, really need to pray." So fortunately, we just had a spiritual convocation. So I really thank God. I was like kind of charged up after the spiritual convocation, like two spiritual convocations or something, I don't know. And one morning, the next morning, I say, "I really, really need to ask God. I really need to get some kind of sign from God." I guess I never prayed as hard in my life. You know, I fasted that morning. I said, "God, I have to give me an answer." Because I knew before I've made mistakes. I've judged people by sight, by the way they looked, by their education, their potential in income earning potential. You know, all these kind of things, family background, their interests, and all these things that possibly you can think. I'm not saying those things are not important, because personality, all these things can really, you know, work, you know, for or against in a relationship. But in that prayer, God had reminded me that I've really walked by sight and not by faith. You know, that verse just came to me in that verse. And so I repented before God, said, "Lord, yes, that's I repent of my sins of not trusting in you, to fully trust you, and now I want to fully trust you. No, but just let me know if it's a yes. Let me say so with a peaceful heart and with confidence, so knowing that this is your choice for me. But if it's no, let me have that peace that this is your will. And somehow through that prayer, it's really a spiritual struggle. But I came to surrender myself because I really, really know God wants what's best for me. There's no one in this world knows what's best for me besides God. And I trust that He will give me what's very, very best. Even something that I can't even understand. So I say, I surrender all my will, but please help me. And I really thank God that during that prayer, I felt His hand holding. When I was praying like this, I felt the Lord's hand as my left hand holding my right hand. And that's a feeling that I felt before when I first received the Holy Spirit. I could feel the hand of Jesus. And that prayer, I could feel His hand holding mine. And that just a sense of peace swept over me. And He let me know that this is the right way to go. And it wasn't it's not an audible voice, but He also let me know this is going to be a really difficult path. It's not going to be easy. So I said to God, as long as you hold my hand, wherever you want to lead me to go, I will go. But just don't let go of this hand. And after our prayer, I told that sister that, okay, go for it. So I guess she contacted Elder John, and Elder John, discussed with his wife and TJ, and they had a family meeting. This is something I found out afterwards, okay? Afterwards, I did not know. They had a family meeting, and TJ's mom says, no way. Gotta be a Korean daughter-in-law. Because she spoke no English. She only could have, conversing in Korean. And also because that's the only son, and she had a very bad relationship with her mother-in-law. So she swore that she would be the best mother-in-law in the world. So she said, I can't be a good mother-in-law if I can't communicate with my daughter-in-law. No way! And TJ goes, I don't think it's going to work. Chinese? I don't think so. never in his dreams would think, marry someone that's different than his culture, because he had always thought he would just marry a Korean sister. But, and they did try. He even went back to Korea, looked for sisters, and nobody, worked, which I thank God. But he said, nobody wanted me. At that time, I was still in school, no job, no money. Who wanted me? Also, at that time, he was 30 years old, and he was still in school because he had to support himself, many years. So it took him a while before he finished his degree, but a bachelor's degree. So anyway, so when they first heard that, they just totally reject. Only Elder John, for some reason, he felt like, I don't know what he saw in me. He just felt like, that's the girl. So they say, okay, we'll just pray about it. They pray about it. And I really thank God for TJ. And that's the power of parents. Parents pray. It's never too young, I think. TJ start already praying for Anna and Jesse's future marriage. I say, what? What are you talking about? I can't even look beyond teenage years. So what are you talking about, them getting married? This is like crazy. But for him, he already see that. He already see that. I said, we have to start praying for them, for a few. And I know where he got it from, because he learned it from his parents. His parents pray for his marriage. They prayed really hard. And his mother, TJ's mother, has a gift in Revelation. When she was in Korea, many important decisions in the church, she would actually receive direct revelations from God. And what happens during the prayer, her hands will just raise up and start writing the answer in the air. Yeah, it's amazing. She had that gift. So I don't know how long they pray for, but they pray about that, and God revealed to them that this is the right way to go. And so TJ's mom said, okay, I can go against God. Because I thank God that both of his parents are very obedient to God's will. You know, even though her own will said no, no way, but she obeyed. So what could TJ say? So if my mom and dad say yes, I guess I better go. So when I asked him later on, he's like, well, that's not a very enthusiastic response, you know. But at that time, he was just really honest. He said, I really didn't know. I really could not tell. But I could see my mom and dad. They were so, they could see that it came from God. So for him, he says, you know, the only thing he prayed is that if we meet, and if she likes me, then he said that will be my indication that this is the right thing to go. But now, the challenge comes when, again, I'm not saying this is the right way, I'm just saying this is what happened to me. I worked, and everybody is different, you know, as Sister Pachi, Brother William, and other couples, and I know there are many other couples there that were being introduced to the church, and they all work very different way. And normally they go through the courtship part. But for my case, when both sides said okay, and so I talked to Sister Lee, the sister who introduced me, or to Elder John, say, okay, so how do we, you know, can we call? And TJ's dad said, no. No? So how are we, so you write to each other, send a picture, a current picture. Say, that's kind of old fashioned. You know, this is of course before the email. You know, this is how long ago it was. So we actually wrote each other, you know, we sent a picture of a current picture. It's like, I was born in this city on this day, I went to this school, I came to the US this, I like this, I, you know, it's like your resume, right? Not personal at all. And after we exchanged, I guess, a couple of letters, which by, I don't know if you knew, TJ hates writing. So you can tell his letters are not very long. You know, it's like, okay, so what else? What, you know, there's really not much at all. His letters very brief, you know, to the point, and you know, that was it. And I said, we can't, you mean you can't call each other? He said, no, that's not necessary. We'll just set a date for your engagement. I said, oh, really? So, for when my mom asked me, say, so what is this guy like? You know, how is he like? I said, I can't tell you a whole lot because I really don't know a whole lot. You know, the only thing is like he's an accounting major. He's, you know, he probably intends to dedicate himself to be a pastor one day. You know, that's he's 30 years old. That's about it. Oh, by the way, that's one thing that I have prayed to God for is that I felt, since God had called me and led me, I feel God has given me so much that I'd have asked God, be careful now, be careful what you ask for, because you might very well get it. I had prayed to God, so if at all possible, if you should choose to give me someone who wants to dedicate himself to the Lord for life. And at that time, this is before TTP? Before TTP ever have, we at that time there was, I think if there's any pastor that need to be trained to be a pastor, anybody, brother, we have to go to Taiwan, okay? So I've been waiting and waiting, nothing's happening. I say, okay God, maybe not full-time pastor, board member will be fine. Board member is fine, okay. I'll lower my standard, that's fine. You know, but you know, it just blows my mind what God knows our heart. And when he mentioned, Elder John mentioned that he may very well become a pastor one day, and he want to make sure that I'm okay with that. And I said, in my heart, I say, wow, God, how did you know? You know, how did he know that's what I had asked for? So anyway, fast forward a few months, and we just set a date, you know, for us to meet. At that time, in my understanding, that the time we meet, we're going to meet for like, we're going to see each other for about a week, and the end of that week, we're going to be engaged, okay? But the week before we actually met, people start telling me things. Say, Alice, what are you doing? You're crazy. This is 21st century. Don't just get married like that. You have to meet. You have to, like, you know, get to know each other. You have to spend time. Slow down. You don't just get married like this. This is, you know, it's like even people who you know, match up in the church, they don't always work, you know. And they just start telling me all these bad examples or horrible things that could have gone wrong. And even things that they heard rumors about TJ, and then they just go, ah, what? And I told myself, no, I'm not going to be swayed. God promised me. I know this is the right thing. But guess what? That day I went home, I was in serious crisis. I said, oh, I've made a terrible mistake. They're coming in a week, and I'm just going to commit myself to this person who I know nothing about. I must be out of my mind. I was so terrified. So I called up, I called Elder John and said, can we call off this engagement thing? Let's just be friends for now, for like a while before we even talk about marriage, because we got to meet, you know. It's just unreasonable for you not to let us meet at all, you know. This is not right. So I wanted to talk to him about that. But somehow, I couldn't get hold of him. He went to bed early, so I couldn't talk to him. I said, okay, I need spiritual leader who can give me wise counsel. I want to call pastor. So I call pastor in West Coast. He wasn't home. I call pastor in East Coast. His fax machine keeps on coming up. I could not reach anybody. So I said, I can't tell my mom. She will panic. She will say, I told you. You know, so I can't tell my mom. So what could I tell? I can only talk to God. So I got my Bible. I just opened up. I felt James, book of James. I start reading chapter 1, verse 1. As I was reading, you know, I feel like God was just pointing his finger at me and said, you of little faith, you're just like a ship tossed, you know, up and down just because of the words people say. You're just so unstable. You know, no faith. I was like, oh, I'm terrible. I could not finish chapter 1. By the end of chapter 1, I was weeping of shame and for not trusting God. I knelt down and prayed. I don't know how long it was, perhaps 30 minutes or so. But when I got up, I was changed. I was a new person because God renewed my hope in him, and God assured me again that this is the right way. Don't be. I don't know if I can do it again. I seriously don't. But it just so happened that at that time, God gave me the faith. And each of you, you have to trust that God will give you that faith to make that decision. If you are willing to open your heart to him and commit your life to him, he will give you that faith. Don't think it's impossible, you know, nowadays. It's possible. So when that happens, and then finally we met, it was like the first time we met, it's just like we've known each other for years and years. It's so very comfortable. And he even tells me that, he said, the thing he remembers is my firm shake. This is a Texas howdy-do shake, you know. And he would tell me things like that. He says, you know, It's just amazing how things just fell in the right places. And he could tell, I guess, I couldn't hide, that I liked him. So for him, that was a very clear sign for him that this is from God. Because he was so afraid that this girl that is being introduced, she came all the way from LA, you know, and then she doesn't like me, you know. He would be so, he was so afraid. And, but things turned out, you know, so miraculously. So by the end of that week, or whenever, you know, we want to, you know, I would just take them around to see different parts of Texas, and Elder John would be with us. It's like, oh, yeah, this is a very interesting date, you know, with this Elder John next to us. You know, it's like constantly, you know, watching us and listening to us. Like, you can do a whole lot. But anyway, by the end of that week, we just feel like this is so right. And then we were engaged, and that's when we started really courtship. We really started finding out about each other, and then I fall in love. You know, it's just amazing how knowing that this is a person that you will be forever, and you fall in love with that person, and he's not gonna go anywhere. You know that. Because, you know, in TJC, once you're engaged, you're pretty much set, right? But then if you don't have that kind of security, when you fall in love, when you give your heart to that person, you don't know if that person's going to be around. His heart may change. He may see somebody prettier, better, richer, whatever, and then decide to just leave you. So, but then... That's why, I guess, in the dinner, she says to say, yeah, no, there was no spark. You know, spark is not required to get the fire going. But fuel, yes. You need to constantly add fuel. And it's a process. It's a daily training that we have to do continually. You know, and today I'm still learning. There are times when I just goof up. I just mess up. Because I was not paying attention to things I do, and I do that, I say things that I hurt, and I do things that hurt. But success stories, yes. Requirement, 3 praying parties. The two that are involved, and also the person who's introducing. So it's never too early to pray. Are you ready? How well do you know yourself? I think that's so crucial. That's why I said date Jesus for a year before you actually seriously thinking about it. Because if you don't know yourself, you could be setting a very unrealistic expectation about your future spouse. And then choose what you think is the appropriate way, whether you think you can date by setting some very clear boundaries, or whether you will go through a route of courtship through introducing, you know, by a third party. So, and the question I have for you is also, are you ready to deal with temptations? I was going to talk about the different sexual temptations that youth go through. I think it would be good for you to go through that in your J1, J2 classes, to actually talk about where do they think is the cutoff line as far as sexual immorality goes. And you'll be surprised sometimes in where they think is the cutoff line. But dealing with temptations is not that easy. We always think we oftentimes overestimate ourselves. Just like I once have done. I'm gonna go really quickly. So the lasting relationship, this is just review. Ephesians 5, 1 and 2 involves commitment, sacrificial love, and seeking after God's will. Sorry. A very caring computer tells me to take a break. And seeking after God's own will. This is absolutely essential for us to have the right perspective. And this is back again, Ephesians 5, verses 1 and 2, as we talked about. Is it stuck? I think we're pretty much... Oh, yeah, we have one more, but my computer's not going. Okay, here goes. Do I know God's purpose for me? As I mentioned in the beginning, that... that is something I think we really need to be aware of and ask God, what is it God wants? Because our marriage affects our life so much. And what am I doing to prepare myself for that purpose? Am I ready to receive God's best for me? A lot of times probably other people would tell you this is what God's plan is, but they may not be ready. And as we are teaching our children, what kind of message are we presenting to them? By our lives, by our actions, our words, and everything. And for me, I that's a question that I constantly ask myself. What kind of message am I sending to my children or my students? And I'd like to share one that has been very powerful for me. As a reminder, is in Habakkuk. Can we all turn to Habakkuk chapter 3? Habakkuk chapter 3, verses 17 and 18. 19, 17 through 19. May we have a sister to read these verses? Habakkuk chapter 3, 17 through 19. Sister Lucy, would you please? 3, 17 through 19. Thank you. This is, I think, written in the context of that culture, because it's, as you can tell, it's a very agricultural background. So what I have done is rewritten those verses in present-day language. This, I think, will probably sound a little bit more familiar. I'll start with the younger ones. Though I should never possess another computer, laptop, cell phone, MP3s, though I should never have internet connections or able to watch another movie or hear my favorite songs, though I should lose my house, my job, my business, all the comfort and convenience money can buy, though I should be stricken with cancer, suffer excruciating pain, lose the ability to serve you, though all my friends should deserve me, the world ridicule me and persecute me, though you should take those who I love away from me, though I should be stripped of all dignity as a person, yet my tongue will praise the Lord, my Redeemer and Savior, my soul will worship you, my Maker. That's a very high standard, but that is the standard I'm trying to set for myself. I think that is the kind of standard we want to set for our students, our children. If we don't aim high, we will never reach anything higher than what we are today. Am I going to fail? Yes, I'm gonna stumble and fall and hurt myself a lot of times and be totally shamed because of the mistakes I make. Yet, God will see my heart. God will see each one of our hearts. And He will know that we are aiming in the right direction. And He will be able to help us. So, with the Lord's help, I believe we can achieve in a higher standard in our Christian walk. What I have here is more of encouragement to our youth. You may share these with your youth class. as an encouragement. This is my conclusion before we end this session. I'm sorry? Oh, the names, why? Yes, thank you so much, Annie. Okay, why do we have the couples paired up? And Pastor Young, can we ask you to explain? Why did you choose the pair just now? Why Sam paired up with Lila? Oh, really? Okay. What about the other was it Joe and Mary? Was pretty obvious, right? Everybody got Joe and Mary, right? Okay. And what about Emmy and, okay, that was the leftover, right? Okay, Sam and Lila. Was Samson and Lila? Ah, not a good pair, right? But what I was trying to illustrate that a lot of times when we pair up, you know, when you try to find someone, you don't always find the right person, and you go through a lot of guesswork, a lot of trial and error, and in the meantime, you get hurt. Right? You get hurt because you find out that's not the right one, because you didn't know whether that was the right one. And later you have spiritual person that gives you guidance, somebody like a pastor, marriage coordinator, your parents, someone who has more spiritual knowledge, someone who really cares about you, who prays for you. You know that person sincerely prays for you. Point out the right person, such as my case, other people's cases, that can happen. I really did not expect him to get all three right. I was expecting him to get one right. But that's what happens for someone who has the spiritual insight, who's willing to share their time to pray for you. And a lot of times God will speak. Because I have done the same game, same trick with other youth groups at least two or three times. And one time they did not get any pair at all. There's one time they got one pair correctly. And my point is that many times even other people who can tell you, say, oh, I think you're good together, they may not always be right if they don't have that spiritual insight, or they're not really praying for you, or you know, they may just looking at the wrong perspective. But this is a poem that I really, really like and kind of summarizes of our talk and kind of encourages you. God's plan. Everyone longs to give himself completely to someone, to have a deep soul relationship with another, to be loved thoroughly and exclusively. But God to the Christian says, no. Not until you are satisfied, fulfilled, and content with being loved by me alone, with giving yourself unreservedly to me, with having an intense personal relationship with me alone, discovering that only in me is your satisfaction and to be found, will you be as capable of the perfect human relationship that I have planned for you. You will never be united with another until you are united with me. I want you to stop planning, wishing, and allow me to give you the most thrilling plan existing, one that you cannot imagine. I want you to have the best. You just keep watching me, expecting the greatest thing. Keep experiencing the satisfaction. I am. Keep listening and learning all the things I tell you. You just wait. That's all. Don't be anxious. Don't worry. Don't look around at the things I've given to others. Don't look at the things you want. You just keep looking up to me, or you'll miss what I want you to show you. And then, when you're ready, I'll surprise you with a love far more wonderful than all your dreams. You see, until you and the one I have for you is ready, until you are both satisfied exclusively with me and my plan for your life, you won't be able to experience the love that exemplifies your relationship with me. And thus, the perfect love. My beloved child, I want you to see in flesh picture of your relationship with me, the everlasting union of beauty, perfection, and love. Know that I love you utterly. I am God. Believe it and be satisfied. So with this, I conclude tonight's workshop or seminar. Any comment, question? Thank you for your patience. Again, I can't stress enough how much I'm still walking and learning every day, this whole relationship and the marriage. It's a lifetime process. Don't think that once you get married to quote-unquote the right person because you saw signs or whatever. Because there's actually one sister that told me, so now what happened, Alice? I thought this is the one. I thought God told me this is the one. Why is my marriage not working? And she's going suffering and struggling so much with her husband, you know, for a period of time. You know, and I tried to tell her, I don't know if she really could understand. It's like it takes effort from both parts. Don't think just because God have fleshed this person's name before you and then told you this is the right one, that everything is like heaven, you know, everything is like happily ever after, just like in Cinderella story, you know. No, it's not. It's not. I've never prayed or cried so much, I think, since I got married, after I got married. Because during that period of time, I struggled because I still have my self-will, even knowing that this is God's plan. But the wonderful thing is that every time I had doubt, every time we had different opinions, which I guarantee you will have lots of those. Maybe not as many, but you know, it's going to happen. You will have disagreement every time that happens. But what happens is when I step back and I think, but this is the one God has given me. So I need to learn. I need to learn first instead of questioning and doubting God, because that's just not anywhere in our relationship. It's like we will never wonder, did I make a mistake? Is this really the one? You know, it was never even in our mind. We will not question that anymore. This is out of the picture. So what's left is that then it's just you and me. We just gotta work with learning how to better communicate and better understand each other. And that just makes things work smoother. But if you don't have that kind of a background, you will, something in the back of your mind, especially when you start fighting for very small, tiny, little, insignificant things, you will say, I probably made a mistake. Maybe this is what's not right. Maybe this is not what God planned. So my wish for our young brothers, sisters, and for our parents that will have teens coming up, is to help ourselves and each other in striving for that higher goal. Let's conclude with a prayer and ask the Lord to help us.